Dion, that's the way it is. It's 8 minutes past 3 o'clock on a Wednesday. Time now for Uncensored with Penny Faree.
Good afternoon, Dave, and a warm welcome to all our listeners. We have another full lineup today, and joining us in the studio is political commentator Warwick Chapman. Warwick's also the chairperson of the Kwadikuza Residents Forum, a civic organization that champions the interests of all residents in our region. So with just 1 week left until South Africans head to the polls, we're going to address some key issues today about the voting, state security in KZN, considered we're a battleground province. We're going to weigh in on all those. But since then, since a podcast aired last week, our main story hit the air, and it was involving around the case of suspended KDM municipality CFO, Shamir Rajkumar. In a significant development, the ANC regional leadership released a statement yesterday in response to my request for comment to outline their position on the matter of the CFO suspension. Up until now, they've been very quiet on it. For those who missed the show last week, we broke the news that according to a well-placed ANC source, the party did not in fact support the suspension of the CFO and were not behind the decision to remove him. And well-placed sources within the ANC informed me that the ANC councillors had been calling for his reinstatement since early this year, but the municipal manager, Nhlanhla Ndakana, had been refusing to budge on the matter. We went on to report that ANC councillors would be taking the matter into their own hands by planning to boycott today's crucial council meeting, which was set to adopt the new budget for the 24-25 municipal year. Earlier this week, I approached the ANC for comment, and yesterday they issued a statement. So the ANC regional secretary, Sifisile Zulu, outlined certain key points. So firstly, he said the ANC expressed dismay that the special council meeting, which they scheduled for yesterday, failed to meet the quorum. 34 ANC councillors put in applications of leave. This delayed crucial decisions, including the decision on Rajkumar's suspension. He emphasized that senior managers should not be suspended for more than 6 months without resolution, noting that Rajkumar's suspension has dragged on for almost a year. And he said the deliberate contravention of laws and regulations in this case makes us suspect that there's a well-coordinated effort by certain municipal officials who collaborate with external forces to besmirch the image of the CFO and that of the ANC-led municipality. Their actions seem to have nothing to do with regulations, but a personal agenda systematically crafted to get rid of the CFO. That's what he said. And he went on to state that the ANC considered KDM as one of the most strategic municipalities in the country. Now, I approached KDM spokesperson, Spulelo Ngombizi. He reiterated the fact that the matter is under judicial consideration and cannot be publicly discussed. And he said the issues remain between the employer, who's KDM, and the employee, and does not yet qualify as public information. He said media and the public will only be engaged upon the matter's conclusion. So Warwick, we're going to bring you in to weigh in on this. My question is, if this is the case, how is it possible that the municipal manager can override the wishes of the entire council? Now, we heard Action SA's Nel Siraj last week. He went on record and confirmed that all the parties are united in calling for his reinstatement. So does the municipal manager have the authority to make these decisions when the whole council has voted their support for his reinstatement?
Well, the municipal manager is a technocrat, and he's making use of the rules of council to block the motion. So the moment a motion, for example, for the reinstatement of the CFO got tabled, the standing rules of council require that that motion get approved by the municipal manager, who has to give it a sanity check. And part of that sanity check is a legal check.
Okay.
Now, we already know which lawyers the municipality and the MM are using.
Yeah, Zoom and Partners.
And so we know how that sanity check is going to turn out, right? And so the MM is blocking these motions from being tabled before council by dismissing them at that level. As we saw yesterday, an absolutely stunning 35 or 36 ANC councillors puts in leave to block the council meeting from having a quorum from happening. And it's quite astounding. To be frank, the ANC have a huge mess on their hands here. On the one hand, you've got a spokesperson saying he can't comment on it because it's
sub judice, as they say.
Effectively, the very abused concept of being sub judice, which is almost always incorrectly quoted in South Africa. But in this case, we have a court that has ordered for the public to be active in this process. That, in fact, you were given permission to attend what would have been a private interaction because it was recognized that this matter is in the public interest.
Yeah.
So to say something like that at this late stage in the process is just frankly avoiding answering the question, which is usually the case when anything like sub judice is raised.
And, I mean, the records are public. I mean, I read the MM's statement, and it was, you know, his affidavit on the amount of money that is in question, which is 37,000 rand, was in the statement. So it was, it wasn't sensical.
The next thing to say is this statement that was released yesterday or today by the ANC is quite remarkable. On the one hand, they credit Mr. Raj Kumar with the capable stewardship of our municipal finances to the extent that we were ranked in the top three in the country for municipal financial management. Now, that's a monumental achievement, and the fact that the ANC is recognizing that in a statement is significant, but it's really a mystery what the purpose of that statement is, because on the one hand they're sort of complaining that they're being held to ransom by officials that are appointed by them, by their party, and on the other hand they're going out to voters and saying vote for us because we're the party who can get more done. I just don't get it. If you want to get more done, here is a challenge to the ANC and to all of the other parties in council. Call a special general meeting immediately and table a motion to remove the municipal manager. He's wasted upwards of 4 million rands of our taxpayers' money. He's forced Mr. Raj Kumar to spend hundreds of thousands of rands of his own money and to suffer the embarrassment of being on suspension for nearly a year. In the meantime, who knows what harm has been done to our municipal finances? That still has to be explored and uncovered. And this is all at the hands of a municipal manager who has been wasteful with public funds and who has who seems to have been pursuing personal vendettas with the public purse.
Yeah, I mean,
and
even,
he needs to go.
Yeah, even the ANC has said that. Today at the council meeting, the budget meeting, Action SA's councillor actually tried to put a motion forward, and I got the voice note for it, the sound bite. We're going to just play it just to see how he was actually shut down by the Madam Speaker, who happens to be the ex-mayor, Dolly Govender. It's not, it's not. He basically tried to put a motion forward. He put the motion forward and she shut him down. She says, no, it's not on the agenda, and completely shut him down. So, you know, you raised that point with the legal costs that the ratepayers have footed for the 4 million, almost 4 million rand. On Monday, Raj Kumar and his legal team had been set down to appear before the bargaining council to hear the matter, to get the suspension overturned. And once again, KDM's legal team managed to come up with some contrite delay tactic as well, saying that the council did not have jurisdiction to make a decision on it. And then obviously the commissioner gave them until Friday now to come up with arguments, and then he was going to make his decision in 14 days. And that little sojourn cost the ratepayers 300,000 rand in legal fees.
I think we might have that soundbite for you, Penny. Do you want to give it a go?
Yes, let's hear it again.
Yes, it's good to see everyone is here, well, at least most of us. And Speaker, obviously yesterday's meeting was a bit disappointing, but nevertheless such things happen. However, Madam Speaker, it has come to, I think, everyone's knowledge at this point in time, seeing as what has been circulated in the news in regards to the CFO matter, which obviously is now public knowledge. Madam Speaker, it's evident to us that I believe the ANC wants to bring back the CFO. So, as a step forward,
I'm not going to allow you to go any further about this year, but the matter was yesterday discussed, and we will bring an item.
No, that's fine, Madam Speaker. Let me just take my proposal, and then we can determine whether if it will not be done or not, whether we agreed upon or not. But, Madam Speaker, what I was trying to say is, seeing as there is a seriousness, judging from the press statement that was released by the ANC, to bring back the CFO, I propose that at least for a step forward, that we consider dropping the charges.
I think we will not discuss that. Can you understand my language?
I know I understand your language, Madam Speaker.
I'm sorry. I think you are now taking it to an item that is not yet a discussion.
No, I know.
Please, Councillor Honourable Councillor Zulu, please, let me continue to do my work.
I'm just saying, Madam Speaker, let me finish my statement so you can understand what I'm going through.
Council number 70.
Madam Speaker, you have hands.
There you go.
Well, gosh.
Yeah. Shut it right down, hey?
Did she say, do you understand my language?
Well, yeah. It was difficult to hear, but it's entirely possible. We'll take a little breather. Ridiculous. We'll be back with Uncensored on the other side of this commercial break.
The outdoor life is for everyone. And our clothes are too. It's made to last in the sun, wind and weather. Whether you're fishing, hiking, camping or going to work. Get all your favorite brands like First Ascent, Cape Storm, African Nature, High Tech and Columbia all under one roof. Outdoor Warehouse. For every adventure. Also shop online.
Bidvest McCarthy Toyota Bolito offers exceptional customer service for all your vehicle needs. Located in the heart of the community, they're easily accessible, making it convenient for you to find your perfect Toyota. Their highly trained service division and parts center is committed to providing expert technical advice and sourcing parts nationwide, ensuring your complete satisfaction. Our people deliver. It's not just a slogan, it's their promise to deliver a superior experience. Bidvest McCarthy Toyota Bolito, where exceptional service meets all your motoring needs.
Lux Zimbali, powered by Dwell Properties. Discover Lux in Zimbali Estate, the final and most unrivaled sectional title development to date. Lux Zimbali is the epitome of luxury coastal living. Located on the award-winning golf course's signature hole, Lux boasts incredible golf course and sea views. Lux residents will enjoy access to Zimbali's world-class facilities, including the magnificent Valley of the Pools, the family-focused Bushbuck Club, the newly renovated Capital Hotel, as well as direct beach access. With limited opportunities remaining, discover 3- and 4-bedroom condos and villas starting from 5.5 million. Contact our team at luxzimbali.co.za to book a site visit and discover Lux Zimbali.
22 minutes past 3 o'clock on a Wednesday, and Uncensored with Penny for Recontinues.
Yes, so that was the Action SA's Sipho Zungu from the Action SA. He's a councillor with the party. So my question, Warwick, is, you know, we've discussed KDM's legal bill has already cost the ratepayers almost 4 million. Surely this amounts to irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And do you think our ratepayers associations need to step in now and demand some form of accountability? I mean, they're using hard-earned ratepayer money to continue this fiasco, which actually centers around 37,000 rand in bank charges dating back to 2018 when the municipality actually switched bankers. It's nonsensical. Yet they have used almost 4 million rand to defend this 37,000 rand bank charge. It's nonsensical, as I said.
Yeah, look, the money's gone, right? That 4 million rand is in the lawyer's pockets, and it has been wasted. The question now is what consequence management will take place. Yeah. Is the ANC going to put its money where its mouth is and hold the officials that they refer to vaguely in their statement? Are they going to hold those officials to account? And that requires some action, some consequence management. That means that you don't just wrap people over the knuckles. It means you remove them from the position. And if they don't remove them from the position, then every single civic organization, residents, and political parties need to stand up and say, this is mad. And enough is enough. The municipal manager must go. Someone who is accountable and who is interested in taking this municipality forward must step into the void. And if they fail to do that, they need to be reminded that the municipal elections are a mere 2 years away. 2026, local government elections.
Yeah.
And they need to be reminded that they govern this municipality as part of a coalition. They have to buy the vote of one other voter, one other councillor, in order to get anything done on this council.
That's correct.
Because they don't have a majority. And if they think that they're going to hang on to that majority with this sort of government, this quality of performance, then I think they've got something else coming.
Yeah, you know, accountability and consequence management, I feel it's like a unicorn word in today's political sphere. We've seen so little of it. And I know the municipal manager has such a terrible record of consequence management with his department and accountability. So, you know, I think the pressure needs to come possibly from the civic organizations who should be the watchdogs of the municipality and how ratepayers are paying their money. I think that is an important part of this entire fiasco. They actually need to lend their voice now into this whole fiasco. I know we're going to be moving on now. KwaZulu-Natal is considered a battleground province. There was a vacuum in the leadership in July 2021 when the riots broke out. And yet, in our town, within 24 hours, a functioning Greater Belita Operations Center had been set up. And at the moment, there are legitimate concerns about outbreaks of violence during or after the elections, with KZN shaping up to be the province most vulnerable to Jacob Zuma's MK party. Some polls point to MK taking 10% of the vote. Now, in the elections, we are the second largest province in terms of our population, with 5.7 million registered voters. Do you think we are prepared for the eventuality, should anything come about? Has the the Greater Belita Center been working with any the district command officials as well? I know Major General Anthony Gopal, he said they have been preparing in the background together with the IEC to monitor hotspots, and that, you know, there are plans in place.
Well, I think it's important to be clear that the Greater Belita Operations Center was a temporary construct.
Okay.
It appeared in a void and it disappeared when it was the right time to go. It's not the kind of thing that should exist. It's not the kind of thing that should ever have needed to exist in the first place.
Yeah.
So during that time, as you point out, there was a void. Municipal and political leadership evaporated. The police, to a large extent, evaporated. And the community needed a structured way of coordinating the response. And the GBOC was what was created. Obviously, there have been a few scares since then, and people are aware that something like this could happen again, and the risk of violence is higher now, or unrest is higher now than it has been for a while, because obviously elections are a contentious time. So probably the most consistent piece of feedback that we, as in the people who were involved then, have got over the ensuing years is do we have a plan? Is there something in place? The short answer is yes. We took the best of what was created during that week, and we've tried to make sure that the people are on hand, that the equipment is available, that the communication channels are in place, so that if, and I emphasize if, something like that needs to be spun up again, it can. But really the intention is that the state learned a big lesson out of that experience. The police are far more vigilant than they used to be when there are these kinds of incidents. They have every incentive to make sure that they manage the situation correctly, particularly in the lead up to the election, because there's this truck driver's strike that's potentially scheduled now or rescheduled for the day before the election.
Yeah, Tuesday, they said.
And if there is large-scale unrest as a result of that, it's going to reflect very poorly on the ANC. And so there's an electoral incentive for them to keep that under control.
Yeah.
So I'm hopeful that the official security apparatus will be able to manage the situation. But in the hopefully unlikely event that the citizen force needs to be activated, all I can say is that it will happen.
Yeah, and we'll be able to get mobilized as fast as we did last time. And just
if I can also just point out that the neighborhood watches and the community policing forums, they are the official structures. And one of the crucial things that we did after that experience was recognize that that's who this responsibility needed to be released to. And so when I say that those preparations are taking place, that's happening at a CPF and neighborhood watch
and
level.
And they've organized themselves and mobilized well since then. So they are in place. I know there are 70 political parties registered to vote, 11 independents. And for the first time, we've got the 3 ballot paper instead of the 2 ballots. Can you just briefly explain how the new system will work? I know there's a lot of people who are a bit confused about it.
Okay. Well, you're going to get an orange, a pink, and a blue ballot paper.
Okay.
And the blue one is your national ballot. And on your national ballot, you have a list of parties. Okay? And you're going to be voting for half of the seats in the National Assembly, a.k.a. Parliament. All right?
Yeah.
So 200 of the 400 seats will be elected based on the adding up of all of those blue ballots across the country. Then the other 200 seats in the National Assembly, in Parliament, are elected using the regional ballot. If I recall correctly, the regional ballot is the pink one.
Okay.
Right? The regional ballot has the same list of parties on it, but it also has the independent candidates. Okay? And that Concord judgment and the resulting squintillions of money that has been spent making it possible for independent candidates to contest... Mm-hmm. It has been taken up by, I think, a sum total of 8 people. So there are 8 independent candidates, and they have to get above the threshold of a single seat's worth of votes in order to get elected, and it remains to be seen whether any of them
will
be
able. How much is that again?
It's about 30,000.
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah.
So that's the regional ballot. And then the final ballot is the orange one, the provincial ballot. The provincial ballot differs from province to province because different parties are registered and contest in different provinces. And that ballot paper is used to determine which parties will be represented in which numbers in the provincial legislatures. So remember, we've got national, provincial, and local government in South Africa.
Yeah.
And you can think of them as 3 independent spheres. We just mentioned earlier that the local government elections will happen in 2026, and that's when we determine who runs KDM and Itakwini and all of those.
Yeah.
In this election, we're going to be saying who's the president and who's running national government, and then who's the premier of each of the 9 provinces and who's running each of those 9 provinces.
Okay.
And that's who we're electing. And the one difference about this election is that we have the opportunity to potentially take a Dave Charles and elect him into parliament in his own name, not as Dave Charles of the DA, because we can potentially now have independent candidates on the ballot.
There you go, Dave. Lend your voice to next national provincial election. I just want to say the voters must remember that they can only make 1 mark on each ballot. If you make more than 1 mark, it's going to be a spoiled vote and won't be counted. And then obviously the ballot sheets have to have a stamp at the back just to make sure that it's verified. So keep that in mind, and then IDs are the only forms of identification. You can't use your passport or your driver's license as a form of identification. And if you've lost your ID, they are going to keep Home Affairs open, and you can go get a special ID docket to vote with.
So it's worth noting that the actual requirement for a valid vote is that the voter's intention is clear. That's the language they use.
Okay, what does that mean? Yeah.
So if you write, I don't like this guy in the box, and that's the only mark on the paper, right?
Yeah.
The voter's intention is not clear. He's not saying, I want to vote for this party. It's confusing. That's immediately a spoiled ballot, right? If someone wrote that inside the box. But if they put a cross, the intention is that the cross is selecting that option, right? Or a tick that they're selecting that option. If they write some, they use some descriptive language next to a party or a candidate, then the intention is not clear. If they wrote it exactly on the midline between option A and option B, the intention is not clear. So those all become spoiled ballots. So you can write, I like this guy, instead of a tick or a cross. You shouldn't. But if you did that and the intention was clear, they would accept it as a valid ballot.
Okay.
The simplest and easiest thing to do is just put a tick next to the party or candidate that you want to vote for.
Don't confuse the counters, people. Just put a tick. Yeah, one tick for each ballot. Okay. So, I know we are at the crossroads in the country at the moment. And what is undeniable is that the situation has currently become untenable. And things cannot carry on as they are. We do need some sort of change. So, everyone, get up and go and vote on Wednesday. And we'll be on the ground covering the events as well and reporting as things unfold.
Yeah, we'll be reporting live in many instances on next Wednesday. I'll be looking forward to that. We will have another edition of Uncensored, I presume, Wednesday thereafter.
On Wednesday we'll be updating and give a sum up on how the voting is going with all the regions around.
Excellent.
Yeah,
and if you've only just tuned in and wondering what this was all about, or you caught half of it or part of it, it'll be up as a podcast immediately after this show, and you'll be able to hear the entire very interesting edition of Uncensored with Penny Foree. And the afternoon show continues.